I'm here with Alexander Mercurs, editor-in-chief of The Duran. Alexander, let's talk about the Trump acquittal and Trump's reaction to the acquittal when he got the news. And he gave two speeches on Thursday. One was at the annual national prayer breakfast on Thursday, so that was in the morning. And then he gave a press conference later on in the afternoon, U.S. time. And he zeroed in on two people. He zeroed in on Nancy Pelosi, and he zeroed in on Pierre Delecto, a.k.a. Mitt Romney. So Alexander, get into Trump's two speeches and what you thought of those speeches. I mean, obviously, the press is going crazy. They're pulling their hair over what Trump said. Pelosi, once again, is also losing her mind. And, well, I think Trump pretty much once again has trolled them brilliantly. Alexander.
He's trolled them brilliantly, and he's made absolutely the right points, it seems to me. I mean, we've discussed Pelosi at very, very great length. But I mean, what Trump was basically saying was that he had been the target of an incredibly dishonest campaign. He threw in this point about corrupt people. But I mean, yes, let's be straightforward.
Over and over, many times.
Over and over again. And you know, let's be frank about it. I mean, they are corrupt. Some of them, anyway. Most of them. Nearly all of them. The most effective trolling is trolling which is true. And this was true. I mean, you know, you could. And the reason the media are tearing out their hair is because, of course, what they were possibly expecting or hoping, and if they really were expecting and hoping it for it, I can't, you know, they obviously still haven't worked Trump out very well. They were expecting Donald Trump to do a sort of Bill Clinton performance, you know, and a thank you, I know, you know, I'm very grateful, I will learn from my mistakes, I realize that, you know, my actions were not always up to the necessary standard. And of course, he did none of that. And he's right not to, because you should never give ground to these sort of people. Certainly not to someone like Pelosi, who has been, as I said, gunning for him right from the moment that he became president and even before. So, you know, I couldn't find anything in his comments about her or about the impeachment process with which I disagreed. And I think it's, again, good politics. Now, as for Romney, I have to say, I've been reading what Republicans are writing about Romney. I don't entirely agree with all of these things. I mean, I read a piece by Byron York in which it was making out, you know, that Romney is this extraordinary opportunist, that he's trimming the winds all the time, which is true. All of that is true. I mean, and Trump was making similar points. All of that is absolutely true. I mean, you know, you can't really expect Romney to follow a straight course. Sometimes he's been conservative. Sometimes he's been almost liberal. Sometimes he's supported, as in Massachusetts, he's supported, a health scheme which is very similar to Obama's. And then he says that he doesn't support it anymore. Sometimes he's pro-choice where abortion is concerned. Other times he comes out and he's anti-choice where abortion is concerned. But the other thing to say about Romney, and it's a very good point, by the way, that Trump and his people are making, is that this is a very, very angry and, man who clearly, viscerally dislikes Donald Trump. And, you know, go back in time, remember some of the things Trump has said about Romney. Remember also that Romney was trying at one time to get Trump to make him Secretary of State, and Trump said no. So there is clearly bad feeling between the two. And I think that was what drove it. When I was listening to what Romney was saying, he came across to me as a very bitter, angry man, actually. And I think that's really what drove it even more than political calculation, because the political calculation, if it is, you know, I can sort of, you know, hedge my bets with these people on this and hedge my bets with these people on that. In this case, it's completely wrong. I mean, what he has done, what Romney has done, is he's destroyed his position with Republicans. There's no conceivable way that he's ever going to be a Republican candidate in any conceivable presidential election again. He will probably, because he's a Mormon, I'm guessing that in Utah, which is, I think, the state he represents as junior senator, I'm guessing that still carries a lot of traction there. And so he may be safe. Yeah, you know, his position in the Senate may be safe. But, well, yeah, well, there you go. You're shaking your head. You know more about
I don't think so, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, well, indeed so. And, I mean, Utah, of course, is no longer, I mean, it's nowhere near being a majority Mormon state as it used to be. So, you know, probably not then. So, but I mean, I think that he has destroyed his career to all intents and purposes. I mean, he may find himself one day having to go to MSNBC or CNN or one of these places and beg them for a job, because frankly, I can't really see any other future for him.
He just might have to do that because, yeah. You know, I remember when he was running against Obama, I mean, they were skewering him. They were completely bashing him, MSNBC, CNN, all these, the New York Times, the Post. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, they're gushing over him because he's anti-Trump all of a sudden. So they're gushing over him, but they'll throw him under the bus sooner or later. There's no doubt about it. And Alexander, one correction, that is not Mitt Romney. That is Pierre Delecto. But, you know, I think they're pulling their hair with Trump because he's figured them out. And your point is 100% valid. Trump does not submit to their attacks. They want him to submit. The neoliberal left, these SJWs, they want submission. And then when you submit, that's when they go to destroy you further. That's when they go to bury you.
Exactly.
They attack you and attack you. They wait for your submission, your apology. I'm sorry. I made a mistake. Whatever, you know, people say whenever, you know, the SJWs and these Pelosis and all of them, they attack you. They want you to submit. And then the minute they see the weakness, then they go for the real kill. Trump doesn't buy into that. And they're pulling out their hair. They want Trump to submit. They want him to go in front of the mic, like you said, Bill Clinton style, and say, you know what? I'm sorry. I've changed my ways. I've seen the light. Blah, blah, blah. And then that's it. They will crush him. That's what they're looking for. And Trump has figured it out. He does not submit.
No, that's exactly right. He's actually much cleverer than other people who in this situation would be. I think, by the way, he learned an awful lot right at the very beginning of his presidency when he let himself get maneuvered into ditching Michael Flynn. And he basically went along with the narrative that was imposed upon him then. And perhaps if you study what happened, it would have been very difficult for him not to. But I think he realized the moment that happened, you know, that he was forced to take a step he didn't really want to take, that put him on the defensive, and that actually was, you know, it was the fact that they were able to get him to sack Flynn that in some ways opened the gate for more of the Russiagate.
Massive turning point.
It was a turning point. So I think he's understood and realized, you know, he does learn. He's, by the way, I've said this so often. I mean, people just don't seem to want to accept this. He is a very clever man. He is someone also who learns. And I think he learned an awful lot from the Flynn business, which is never concede anything, never admit any part of your opponent's argument, especially when you don't have to. When, you know, there is no part of their argument which is a good one. And you know, on the specific issue of Ukraine gate, he is absolutely right. I mean, there is nothing wrong. There was nothing wrong or even unusual in that telephone conversation between Zelensky and Trump. I mean, the only thing that is a bit unusual is that Trump has his own way of speaking, which is a little bit more meandering than you get with some people. But, you know, that's his style. In terms of the content, in terms of what was actually said, it's perfectly ordinary call. There was nothing wrong at all. And, you know, I've been reading some people. I mean, one of them whom I hugely respect as a, you know, an analyst and a lawyer is Andrew McCarthy at National Review. And he said, you know, that Donald Trump should have accepted, should have admitted that, you know, he went too far in putting pressure on the Ukrainians and admitted that this wasn't, you know, that he acted inappropriately in some ways. And but argue that that wasn't impeachable. If he'd done that, he would have been toast. I mean, they'd have had him for breakfast. I mean,
he would have been toast. Yeah, he would have been toast. Absolutely.
I mean, they'd have eaten him alive. I mean, first,
and it wasn't true.
It wasn't true. Exactly. There is nothing true about it. I mean, you can misrepresent that conversation as many times as you want. You can put into it whatever words you like. You can, misrepresent things that Alan Dershowitz said, as they've been doing. But if it's not true and you are Donald Trump, you shouldn't play that game. You shouldn't pretend that you did something wrong when you didn't. If you do that, you give your opponents the advantage, and he understands this.
Yeah, not only does he not play that game, he throws it back in their face. And take, for example, Mitt Romney and Pelosi. All of a sudden, you have these demons talking about, and I say demons in a, maybe in a literal way, but in this case, in a fun way. But you see Pelosi and Romney talk about God now. All of a sudden, they both found God.
I know.
Especially Pelosi is God and prayerful and God this and God that. This is Pelosi saying this. Mm-hmm. And now you have Romney pretty much reading from the same script. What does Trump do in both of his speeches, both in the morning and in the afternoon? He throws it right back at them.
Absolutely.
And he says anyone that has some, I'll paraphrase, anyone that believes in God or has faith pretty much does not act like those two act.
He says,
I found it disgusting. He said something like that. He drove them crazy again. Pelosi was crazy in her response to Trump's speech. She literally was pulling her hair. She was destroyed.
Exactly right. I mean, again, what he is doing, and bear in mind, he is the president who has the support of the evangelical Christians in America. He's got that support. So what he's doing is he's highlighting Pelosi's and Romney's hypocrisy. I think he made the absolutely valid point. Why does Pelosi go on pretending that she prays for Donald Trump when we all know that she isn't? I mean, why bring God into it in that way to embroider your own lie? She doesn't pray for Donald Trump. She doesn't feel sorry for Donald Trump. She's trying to destroy Donald Trump. That's what her entire career over the last 4 years has been all about. So why go around and, pretend in this sanctimonious and unctuous way? I mean, it's absolute, Uriah Heep stuff. If you know your Dickens, you know exactly the kind of person I mean. Yeah. Uriah Heep is an awful character in one of Dickens's novels. Why indulge in this kind of disgusting performance? I always thought that was bad. I always thought it was spectacularly tasteless. And of course, the people who are probably the most annoyed by it are the real Christians, who don't like hearing, God used in this extraordinary way or brought in this extraordinary way.
Yeah, if they knew anything about God or religion or literature, even the great literary minds, everyone knows that when you let such hate consume you, it ends up destroying you inevitably.
Well,
exactly what's happening to Pelosi, and it's going to happen to Romney, and it's happening to the mainstream media. They're letting their absolute hate consume them and destroy them. And comment on that. And then to finish up the video, Alexander, comment on that point, because I know you have something to say there, because you know your literature better than about anybody. But comment on that. And then real quickly, this won't end. It will not end. They're going to think of a new impeachment. They'll think of something else.
Absolutely.
What's your take? What do you think they're going to go after?
Well, you're absolutely. It's not just a literary thing. I mean, Captain Ahab. If you let anger and hatred consume you, it clouds your judgment. It becomes obsessive. I mean, the Americans, as I said, wrote the best ever novel with this, which is Moby Dick, about Ahab going after this white whale and destroying everything and everybody in the process, out of some sort of crazy obsession. And this is what's happened now. As to why they're getting so angry and why they're so full of hatred for Donald Trump, I will quote another literary comment that I read somewhere, but of course I don't remember where I read it. But it was, that people hate those who they've wronged. They know perfectly well that they've been making up all sorts of stories about Donald Trump, that he's not a Russian agent, that he wasn't putting illegal pressure on Ukraine. They know that, you know, there are serious questions to be asked about slippery Joe Biden, if I can use those words. They know that they've been spinning nonsense about Trump. The fact that he always beats them is something that makes that drives is driving them mad, because they know they're doing wrong, and at the same time it's not working, and that makes them more and more angry, and that makes them want to destroy Trump ever more. And as you said, it feeds back into this obsession that they have with Donald Trump, and as you correctly say, they can't give up on it. It clouds their judgment. It is preventing them from putting forward a proper and coherent response to Trump in the election this year. And they will pay a price for it. Donald Trump, I get to say this, I mean, you know, politically, if you challenged him politically, there are lots of things you could argue about Donald Trump. You could take him to task over foreign policy. You could question, you know, his economic policy. I remember how Walter Mondale once said about Ronald Reagan, when Ronald Reagan was boasting about a strong economy, and Mondale said, you know, I too could have a strong economy if I was willing to write billions of hot checks. And that was an effective rejoinder. It didn't work for Mondale in the end, because he was a, you know, fairly wooden character, but it was clever. That is how politics is done. Going on and talking about Donald Trump being, you know, the dictator who's, I mean, the latest insanity is that if he loses the election in 2020, he'll try and remain in the White House. as if such a thing is possible. I've been reading it all over the place that, you know, he'll dispute the result. He can dispute the result, but the decision as to who is the president of the United States is made by the Electoral College. If he doesn't have the votes in the Electoral College, he will cease to be president of the United States. And if he tries to remain in the White House, you know, the officials will remove him. I mean, you know, these are insane things. Donald Trump knows that. He's no such intention. He's never, ever said or given any reason to think like that. And yet now we're having all these crazy ideas circulating about Trump, which show how completely detached from reality the Democrats have become. And as I said, it's not going to work for them in the end, because they are not arguing on the points that the American people care about. They're not arguing about the opioid crisis. They're not arguing about student loans. They're not talking about health issues. Bernie Sanders, to some extent, is trying to do that. But he's not getting any help from the Democratic Party leadership. He's not getting any help from Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff.
The reverse.
On the contrary, as you say, on the contrary, the one Democrat who, apart from Tulsi Gabbard, is actually talking to the American people about the things they care about, whether you agree with him or not, they're trying to stop. They're trying to block.
Okay, so Alexander, do you think they're going to go for another impeachment after the elections when and if Trump wins? Do you think they're going to try to attack him further before the elections with some other kind of, you know, ridiculous Russia-Ukraine scandal? What's next?
Oh, absolutely. That's exactly what they're going to do. They're already talking about now subpoenaing John Bolton to come and give the evidence to the House Intelligence Committee, which, of course, he could have given if they pursued the subpoena before the impeachment, and which they could have produced during the impeachment. This thing isn't going to end. I heard Devin Nunes, the representative from California, who has been leading the attack, the Republican counterattack on all these Democrat allegations right from the start of Russiagate. He made exactly the same point. People with an obsession can never let it go. That is the nature of an obsession. All they're going to do is they're going to bore the American people even more. And as a result, it's going to make for an even bigger victory for Donald Trump in November. But, you know, another impeachment, entirely possible, I would say. If they hold on to the House of Representatives next time, I would have thought that it's actually perfectly likely that they will try and dredge up and find something else. After all, let's remember these people learned nothing from the Russiagate fiasco. Why assume they're going to learn anything from the Ukrainegate fiasco? I mean, you know, what did, you know, Einstein supposedly say, and he didn't actually say it, but, you know, about, you know, how madness is about trying the same thing again and again and expecting a different result. I'm afraid the Democrats are in that stage of madness.
I agree. I think if the Democrats win the House, if they win the House, God forbid, then I think the only question for their next impeachment hoax is going to be which CIS country they're going to choose.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Which one?
I'm sure. I mean, ever more desperate and far-fetched scenarios and theories. And of course, the impeachment will fail all over again. But we'll have all these dramas going on all the time. And of course, the American people will become increasingly bored and angry with the whole business. I mean, you would have thought, as I said, that after this, there would be some contrition and acceptance on the part of the Democrats that they, you know, miscalculated disastrously, and that they, you know, did things in the investigation which was wrong. Nothing like that. Not a word of it. On the contrary, you know, Romney of all people is the great hero for trimming his sails again and going against Trump. John Bolton is, you know, the speaker of truth, and all the indications are that they're going to repeat all the same mistakes all over again, with Donald Trump's popularity rising ever further.
All right, Pierre Delecto, Alexander McCurris, Editor-in-Chief of The Durant. Thank you very much. Guys, if you like this video, click the subscribe button down below. Click on the notifications bell. Smash that like. Go to Patreon, PayPal, and Subscribestar. And please donate to The Durant. Your donation really helps this channel out a whole lot, especially as we are demonetized continuously. And another thing you can do to help us with our fight against demonetization is go to the Durant shop and pick up some magic mugs and some magic t-shirts. Alexander.
Indeed you can. And we make absolutely sure that there's nothing fake about our magic mugs or our t-shirts or indeed our shirts or any of our products. We made a strategic decision right at the start when we set up the shop. Alex was involved in organizing it. We went for quality. In other words, we went for the very best quality merchandise that, you know, seemed appropriate for the kind of shop that we'd have. And it shows. I mean, these magic mugs really are magical because they are strong, they're elegant, they're light, they don't chip or crack or break. I've had this one, which is the magic mug with the coat of arms of the Durant itself, our own very own double-headed eagle, if you can see that. I've had this for over a year, and as you can see, it is literally as good as new, absolutely as good as new, and it keeps my tea hot and my coffee hot in the early mornings and my beer cold, as I've tried on one or two occasions. At all times, it beer cold, I think I said, but it keeps them all at the right temperature. It works exactly as it did when I first got it. It is perfect. It is the best mug I've ever had. And all our Durant mugs are of the same quality. And the same quality you will find in our shirts, long sleeve t-shirt I'm wearing, which is perfect for a cold February day in London. Very sunny and bright out there, but very cold by London standards. And also, we've got long, short sleeve t-shirts. We got really amazing, glamorous looking polo shirts, which you can wear to the most glamorous events. Real epitome of smart casual. We got V-neck shirts. We got hats, hoodies, and stickers. We've also got ebooks where we set out in detail our views on all sorts of subjects. As Alex rightly said, if you go to our shop and buy these things, you are supporting the Durant, because we are always under continuous pressure. So if you support us that way, we can go on providing you with this kind of analysis and information, which some people would rather we didn't. And of course, last but not least, you are the owner of these great things. So don't hold back. Go to our shop, buy these fantastic things, support the Durant. Alex will tell you how.
You'll find the link in the description box down below, thedurantshop.com. Alexander McCurse, thank you very much. Until next time, everybody, take care.